I saw Christ today, not as he is in our stained glass windows, but as a black woman in a purple coat. Christ drove a beige minivan, which she pulled into Moss Park. And when she opened the back hatch, it was filled with meals and takeaway containers and boxes of Tim Hortons coffee. And as the people gathered around, she blessed them as she served them. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. I saw Christ today, not in Galilee or Jerusalem, but in the blue seats on the Pape bus. He had a gray mustache and a hat I'm sure was the height of style when he bought it in 1962. I don't think Christ had anywhere in particular to be. He just seemed to like riding the bus and talking to people. And whenever he saw someone without a seat, he would stand on shaky legs and smile and say, "Please, this is for you. Please, this is for you. Please, this is for you." I saw Christ today, not at the height of his power, but as a child in reindeer footy pajamas. He was awoken by his parents because this hard journey just couldn't wait until morning. Christ was crying as he approached the hospital bed of his grandmother, and he saw the tubes and the medicines in bags. His dad lifted him up onto the bed, and Christ gave his grandmother a kiss on the cheek, and he whispered in her ear, "I love you. I love you. I love you." In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God, and all things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. What had come into being in him was life, and the life was the light of all the people. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overtake it. No angels or magi or shepherds or donkeys, no Mary or Joseph, not even a baby in a manger. The Gospel of John begins by leading us to contemplate the origin of all things. It pulls the lens way back and takes us back well before Bethlehem, long before time itself, to when there was nothing but chaos. The prologue of John's Gospel, as it is known, can be read as a midrash, a Jewish form of biblical interpretation that reimagines readings by crafting new ones, not to replace, but to stand alongside other readings. John's prologue is a midrash of the first creation story found in the book of Genesis. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. John retells the story of creation, where the light by which the Creator brings forth all life was this luminous Word, this light of Christ, the light that no darkness of chaos or evil could ever overtake. This is the cosmic Christ, one with God beyond our limited understandings of time and place, but through whom all time and place finds its origin. This is how the Gospel of John starts, with the lens pulled back as far as it can go, revealing an ethereal starscape of dreams and creative intentions. But then, even before our conscious minds have had a chance to take in the vastness before us, the lens zooms in with laser beam accuracy. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The prologue continues. He came as a witness to testify to the light so that all might believe through him. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify to the light, the true light which enlightens everyone, was coming into the world. from the vastness of the cosmos, we are immediately grounded in a particular time, the time of John the Baptist in first century CE, with a particular people, the Jewish people. The light that is to shine comes through this time and this people, with John the Baptist being the narrative link between the time before the incarnation and the time after the incarnation. This particularity is vital to the story we tell on this holy night. The light through whom all creation came into being has a face, a Jewish face born into a Jewish family. The light that enlightens everything and everyone came as a baby conceived in his mother's flesh, nourished at her breast, needing her love and the love and support of a community in order to grow and to flourish. God's eternal love had a face and lived in a place with a people. The fully human Jesus would experience humanity by walking in the hill country of Galilee and learning a trade and helping out with the harvest and building friendships and going to wedding banquets and reading the sacred texts of his tradition, the stories of Abraham and Sarah, Moses and Miriam, being shaped by the words of the prophets who spoke God's intentions into the world of how people should treat each other. The Christmas story we tell on this holy night is a foundational story for our faith, but also for our humanity. How we tell it, how we interpret it, matters. Now, if you've been to many of these Christmas Eve services before, you will have likely heard the account of Jesus' birth in the Gospel of Luke many times before. You may even think you know it by heart. Angels, shepherds, and Mary and Joseph wearily trying to find a place to rest because there is no place for them in the inn. But tonight, when Lynn read the story, did anything jump out for you this time? Was there anything different, unexpected? Because she read from the most recent translation, the New Revised Standard updated edition that reflects the most up-to-date scholarly understanding of our sacred texts. Did you hear a change from what you might remember? Here, let me read it again. While they were there in Bethlehem, the time came for Mary to deliver her child, and she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no place for them in the guest room. Not there was no place for them in the inn, but guest room. Now, in biblical Greek, there are two words for the English word inn, one being like a hotel where the owner of a building rents out several rooms each night. And Luke uses this word in places like in Jesus' parable of the Good Samaritan, where the beaten up man is taken to an inn to recover. But that's actually not the word being used here in Jesus' birth story. The Greek Kataluma is actually more like an ancient version of Airbnb. In first century Israel, most people lived in a one-room structure. In that one room, there was space for living and sleeping, a fireplace, and oftentimes the animals were brought in the night into that same space for protection from thieves, but also because of the warmth the animals would give. So a manger to feed the animals would have been a commonplace piece of furniture in people's homes in that time. Now, some larger homes would also have a cataluma, an additional second-story upper room that could be rented out to travelers. In this story, Luke is telling us that it is this guest room that was already full. So when we read that Mary gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, this would have been in the main living space of the family who owned the home. Mary and Joseph weren't turned away. They were invited into someone's home. It is simply incorrect to think that Mary and Joseph were forced into a stable that night. They found shelter in the kindness of people. This kindness was so ordinary, so expected within that culture that Luke did not even make mention of the family whose home was that was used for what we consider to be the birthing of God into the world. The Christmas story is foundational for faith and for humanity, and how we tell it matters. In ancient Israel and within the Jewish faith, welcoming the weary traveler was not merely a question of good manners, but a moral and spiritual imperative. Biblical law specifically sanctified hospitality towards the stranger, for as it says in Exodus 12, you were once strangers in a strange land. The Talmud even says that welcoming guests is greater than welcoming the divine presence. This was the social and religious location that formed and shaped the human Jesus. This was the lens through which the light of Christ, which as the Gospel of John asserts, enlightens everything and everyone, was reflected like a beam through a prism into the world. Kindness, hospitality, welcoming the outsider as divine presence became central tenets to the ministry of Jesus, who taught his followers in this way in Matthew 25, I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you took care of me. Then the righteous will ask him, Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. What you do to others, you do to me. God's eternal love has a face. The 20th century English mystic Carol Houselander once had an experience on the London Underground that changed her life. She described it in this way. All sorts of people jostled together, sitting and strap hanging, workers of every description going home at the end of the day. Quite suddenly, I saw with my mind, but as vividly as a wonderful picture, Christ in all of them. But I saw more than that. Not only was Christ in every one of them, living in them, dying in them, rejoicing in them, sorrowing in them, but because he was in them, and because they were here, the whole world was here too. I came out onto the street and walked for a long time in the crowds, and it was the same here on every side, in every passerby, everywhere. Christ, Christ, everywhere. I have come to believe that the realization of our oneness in Christ is the only true cure for human loneliness. For me, too, it is the ultimate meaning of life, and the thing that gives meaning and purpose to every life. After a few days, the vision faded. People looked the same again. Christ was hidden again. Indeed, throughout the years to come, I would have to seek him, and usually I would find him in others and in myself only through a deliberate and blind act of faith. The prologue of John's Gospel says that the Word became flesh and lived among us. Or as the Message translation puts it, the Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. The great cosmic being at the heart of all creation became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. This is the story of Christmas, and how we tell it matters. Christmas is about kindness and hospitality modeled by the family who took in Mary and Joseph. It is about welcoming the birth of God into our homes and into our neighborhoods and into our lives. It is about that deliberate and blind act of faith to live as if each person we meet on the street or on the bus or in the hospital is luminous, luminous, aglow with the original holy light through which God spoke all creation into being. And even if you can't see it yet, even if you don't believe it yet, imagine how different the world could be if we trusted that it was true anyway. How could the world be different if we treated each person as the divine guest, not just our friends and our family members, but strangers, outsiders, even enemies? How could the world be different if we designed our institutions and economies and public policy around this truth? And in these times when so many of us are struggling, for so many reasons, how could our lives be different? How could our lives be different if we trusted that the light of Christ shines through us as well? That eternal love has a face. Eternal love has a face. And it is yours. God bless you. Merry Christmas.